another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. The first LQ update I have is LinuxQuestions.org turns 7. And that's right, just last week on the 16th, LinuxQuestions.org celebrated its 7th birthday. And as I've mentioned before, the site has really grown well beyond what I ever expected it would when I started the site. We've racked up almost 3 million posts and 300,000 members in those 7 years, and we actually hit the 300,000 member mark just about a day and a half after turning 7. First, I'd like to thank each and every member for participating. You really are what make LQ what it is, and really are the reason that we do this. I'd like to once again thank the LQ mods, who are 100% volunteer and just spend a huge amount of personal time at LQ, and a large part of LQ's success can be directly attributed to the mods. They're just a truly fantastic team. Now, I hope you'll be glad to know that even after 7 years, LQ shows absolutely no signs of slowing down. We continue to grow at just an astounding rate, and I think while still staying true to our original goals. And I really think we've managed to stay almost as friendly and welcoming today as when we had 3,000 members years and years ago. And that's really no small feat. Now, while they've been slightly delayed, we have some exciting code updates just around the corner and much more, so stay tuned. I am also happy to announce that the LQ HCL backlog, and that's the hardware compatibility list, has now been completely worked through. That's right, the pending queue is now at 0. I definitely apologize for the delay, and we've put measures in place to ensure that the queue never gets as large as it got again. So with a queue of 0, there's never been a better time to add your hardware to the HCL. There are over 3,200 products in the database now, but we have a long, long way to go if we want to build a truly comprehensive Linux hardware compatibility list. Head over to www.linuxquestions.org/HCL and add your hardware today. Now, on to the news. The first story I have is the Linux Foundation Collaboration Summit update. And I just want to start this off by giving a big thanks to Google. They treated all of us extremely well, and it's just fantastic that they open their campus and do things like this for the open source community in general. Now, the last time I was at the Google campus, it was just pre-IPO, and things have definitely changed, to say the least. Moving on to the actual summit, the conversation at the summit, I think, was both interesting but very real. And to me, those are two key components of real collaboration, which is what the summit, after all, was supposed to be about. Mark Shuttleworth made a good point when he said that anyone in that room agree on far more than they disagree on. And in the middle of a flame war, it can sometimes be easy to forget that. But it was good to see that people weren't just agreeing on everything, and real issues were brought to the forefront. So it's not like everyone was just getting along and patting each other on the back. And I'll just go into a couple of highlights. A ton was covered, though, so I'm kind of just picking a few here. There'd be no way to cover everything. Just too much was discussed, even though it was just a few days. The first thing I noticed is that the crowd was extremely varied, and almost all major groups from vendors, coders, hackers, and community members, just end users, ISVs, etc., 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 pretty much everyone was fairly well represented. There was one data point brought up that I wasn't aware of, and it's on a subject that I've discussed here in the podcast multiple times, and that's somewhere between 1/4 and 1/3 of all actual Linux kernel code is in fact licensed as GPL2 or later, and that could potentially have some interesting implications. There were a bunch of kernel developers there, almost all the major ones except for Linus, and the consensus seemed to be that someday a dual GPLv2, GPLv3 Linux kernel may theoretically be possible, unlikely in the short term, potentially possible in the long term. A GPLv3 only version will definitively not ever happen, pretty much from the looks of it. On the topic of GPLv3, the GPLv3 discussion and the ATI NVIDIA proprietary video driver discussion seem to be the two topics that were really wearing a bit thin on a lot of people. And those are two topics that just get a ton of discussion, and it seems like people kind of want to move on from both of them. there was quite a bit of talk about mobile Linux, and Motorola gave an example of one of the reasons that they're so interested in mobile Linux is that they have a good measure of control over the platform. And, you know, when you get a tome from the carrier stating what you must conform to if you want to run hardware on their network, having access to the code on your phone isn't really a luxury. It actually becomes a business differentiator. And the other point that was brought up about mobile Linux is that to really gain traction in the market beyond what it is now, it really needs to be a consistent platform. And the point they were trying to make there is if it's not a consistent platform, content partners and application providers won't be able to make the business case to support it. And what they mean by that is they just want to support, you know, some kind of quote-unquote mobile Linux for their apps and for their content, not have to support each and every phone carrier combo which runs a slightly different but incompatible Linux variant. Now, another point that was made by Mark Shuttleworth is that it would be a boon if bug reporting was easier, especially with regard to better communication and process flow between both distros and upstream projects. And some type of loose confederation was mentioned, and some problems were brought up from the attendees with that, but it seemed like something that a further conversation is going to happen in regards to that. So, like I said, even beyond that, just a ton was discussed. The Linux Foundation wiki actually has a pretty good roundup of all the discussions if it's something that you're interested in, so you can head over to linux-foundation.org and check that out there. And overall, the summit was fantastic. I saw a lot of great people, met a lot of new great people, and hopefully I will be invited back next year. The next story I have is more Microsoft patent dealings. So it looks like Linspire is the latest company to sign a patent deal with Microsoft. Now, they even managed to wrangle some additional items they claim are not in the other deals. And this is a quote from their press release. Quote, Linspire Inc. has announced an agreement to license voice-enabled instant messaging, Windows Media 10 codecs, and TrueType font technologies for Microsoft for its Linux distribution. Additionally, Microsoft will offer protection to Linspire customers against possible violations of Microsoft patents by Linux. In his June 14th weekly Linspire letter, Linspire CEO Kevin Carmody stated, "This agreement will offer several advantages to Linspire Linux users not found anywhere else, such as Windows Media 10 support, genuine Microsoft TrueType fonts, Microsoft patent coverage, improved interoperability with Microsoft Windows computers, and so on." End quote. Now, Linspire has always been more willing than most to include proprietary codecs and proprietary drivers, so the beginning part of that is really no surprise. And while I may not personally agree with some of their stance, I do think that they are legitimately trying to improve the desktop Linux experience, and I really can't fault them for that. I do find it odd that they chose to have a demonstrably inferior product like Live Search be the default as part of this agreement, but I digress on that. What's troubling, once again, is the inclusion of the dubious patent protection. Now, Linspire, and remember that's Lindows, and Microsoft kind of have a tumultuous history. And in that vein, a post on CBR has some interesting tidbits. And if you're interested in this particular subject, I would recommend you head over to that CBR article. I actually linked to it recently on my blog, so that's probably the easiest way to find it. At this point, we now have three Linux distributions wrapped up in this patent debate. And those, of course, are Linspire here, and then Zandros and Novell. It was speculated that Mandriva may be next, and based on the profile of the latest two companies to join, it seemed a logical guess if you had to make one. So it was good to see that they have gone on record on their site saying that it's not going to happen, and of course Red Hat already rejected the idea. Now Mark Shuttleworth made his feelings with regard to Ubuntu very clear in a recent post, and this is a quote from that post. Quote, "There's a rumor circulating that Ubuntu is in discussion with Microsoft aimed at an agreement along the lines they have concluded recently with Linspire, Zandros, Novell, etc. Unfortunately, some speculation in the media, thoroughly and elegantly debunked in the blogosphere, but not before the damage was done, posited that Ubuntu might be next. For the record, let me state my position, and I think this is also roughly the position of Canonical and the Ubuntu Community Council, though I haven't caucused with the Community Council on this specifically." we have declined to discuss any agreement with Microsoft under the threat of unspecified patent infringements. Allegations of infringements of unspecified patents carry no weight whatsoever. We don't think they have any legal merit, and they are no incentive for us to work with Microsoft on any of the wonderful things we could do together. A promise by Microsoft not to sue for infringement of unspecified patents has no value at all and is not worth paying for. It does not protect users from the real risk of a patent suit from a pure IP holder. Microsoft itself is regularly found to violate such patents and regularly settle such suits. People who pay protection money for that promise are likely living in a false sense of security. I welcome Microsoft's stated commitment to interoperability between Linux and the Windows world and believe Ubuntu will benefit fully from any investment made in that regard by Microsoft and its new partners, as the code will no doubt be free software and will no doubt be included in Ubuntu. End quote. He then also goes on to state why he dislikes OOXML. Quote, with regard to open standards on document formats, I have no confidence in Microsoft's OpenXML specification to deliver a vibrant, competitive, and healthy market of multiple implementations. I don't believe that the specifications are good enough, nor that Microsoft will hold itself to the specification when it does not suit the company to do so. There is currently one implementation of the specification, as far as I'm aware. Microsoft hasn't even certified that their own Office 12 completely implements OpenXML, or that OpenXML completely defines Office 12's behavior. The Open Document Format, ODF, specification is much better, much cleaner, and widely implemented specification that is already a global standard. I would invite Microsoft to participate in the OASIS Open Document Format Working Group, and to ensure that the existing import and export filters for Office 12 to ODF are improved and available as a standard option. Microsoft is already, I think, a member of OASIS. This would be far more constructive open standard approach than OpenXML, which is merely a vague codification of current practices by one vendor. End quote. The speculation as to what Microsoft's end goals are with all this patent talk remains all over the map. I maintain that they themselves may not even be completely sure yet where they're going to go. One might think that they are trying to fracture the Linux market, a sort of divide and conquer, if you will. As long as Ubuntu and Red Hat remain on one side, though, that plan really isn't going to work. The only real loser in that scenario would potentially be Novell, and even they might not be hurt by it at this point. It's becoming clear that smaller, desktop-oriented companies are the current sweet spot for these patent deals, which I think says a lot. In the end, I don't think anyone's sure where this is all going, but it's getting more interesting to watch by the day. The next story I have is, will the real open source CRM please stand up? Michael Tiemann recently addressed an issue that has been stewing for quite a while, and it's an issue I've covered on this podcast quite a bit. This is from his post at the OSI website. Quote, Dana Blackenhorn's story, How Far Can Open Source CRM Get, has finally pushed me to respond to the many people who have asked, when is the OSI going to stand up to companies who are flagrantly abusing the term open source? The answer is, starting today. I am not going to start by flaming Dana. As president of the Open Source Initiative, I feel a certain amount of responsibility for stewardship of the open source brand, including both the promotion of the brand as well as the protection of the brand. The topic of what is really open source and what is not has been simmering for quite some time. And until last year, the question was trivial to answer, and the answer provided a trivial fix. But things have changed, and it's time to regain our turf. So here's what I propose. Let's all agree, vendors, press, analysts, and others who identify themselves as community members, it's to use the term open source to refer to software licensed under an OSI-approved license. If no company can be successful by selling a CRM solution licensed under an OSI-approved license, then OSI and the open source movement should take the heat for promoting a model that is not sustainable in a free market economy. We can treat that case as a bug, and together we can work, with many eyes, to discern what it is about the existing open source definition or open source licenses that made CRM a failure when so many other applications are flourishing. But just because a CEO thinks his company will be more successful by promoting proprietary software as open source doesn't teach anything about the true value of open source. Hey, if people want to try something that's not open source, great, but let them call it something else, as Microsoft has done with Shared Source. We should never put the customer in a position where they cannot trust the term open source to mean anything because some company and their investors would rather make a quick buck than an honest one, or because they believe more strongly in their own story than the story we've been creating together for the past 20 years. We're better than that. We have been successful over the past 20 years because we have been better than that. We have built a well-deserved reputation, and we shouldn't allow others to trade that reputation we earned for a few pieces of silver. Open source has grown up. Now, it's time for us to stand up. I believe that when we do, the vendors who ignore our norms will suddenly recognize that they really do need to make a choice: to label their software correctly and honestly, or to license it with an OSI-approved license that matches their open source label. And when they choose the latter, I'll give them a shout-out, as history shows. Please join me. Stand up and make your voice heard. Enough is enough. End quote. And I definitely think most of us in the community agree that some companies are just completely and utterly abusing the words open source. If I had to guess, I'd say some of it is probably absolutely intentional, and some of it is just probably a lack of understanding. In both cases, though, it hurts us all. It creates confusion, it creates mistrust, and even worse. One thing that I'd like to point out is with the proliferation of companies that are absolutely not traditional proprietary companies, but are definitely not OSD level, and that's the open source definition, level open source, I think it's probably in the OSI's best interest to come up with some sort of taxonomy that properly addresses the issue. Without that, you're potentially telling some well-meaning companies that do a lot of good for the greater OSS community to basically go away. And while I, and certainly most of my listeners, believe strongly in open source, it's still a big leap of faith for many. And it's really easy to find evidence of this if you look around kind of just outside of our community, what people say or think. It's kind of shocking that at this point there is still so much confusion, but there really is. Now, once we have a proper taxonomy in place, I think the action should be both swift and comprehensive. Companies on the fringe can be made aware of the new taxonomy and where they fall within it, and at that point, the only violators left will be of the intentional and malicious sort, so they can be dealt with in a harsh manner with very little chance of collateral damage. Open source. Those two words mean so much. It is absolutely important, as Michael points out so well, that we protect them. It's also important that that protection comes in a way that's congruent with the community spirit. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.